what did happen? Okay. See, we did crash. It was on this crazy island. And we waited for rescue, and there wasn't a rescue. And then there was a smoke monster. And then there were other people on the island. We called them the others. And they started attacking us. And we found some hatches, and there was a button you had to push every 180 minutes, or... Well, I was never really clear on that. But the others didn't have anything to do with the hatches. That was the Darmans. They were all dead. The others killed them. And now they're trying to kill us. And then we teamed up with the others because some worse people were coming on a freighter. Desmond's girlfriend's father sent them to kill us. So we stole their helicopter, and we flew it to their freighter, but it blew up. And we couldn't go back to the island because it disappeared. So then we crashed in the ocean, and we floated there for a while until a boat came and picked us up. And by then, there were six of us. That part was true.
I came on a plane.
What plane?
A Jira Flight 316. And that's how I returned to the island.
So, why him?
What was it that was so wrong with me? What about me?
What about you?
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast for Season 6, Episode 16, What They Died For, and some very important questions about the most important meal of the day. What sideways breakfast do you prepare for Jack, Claire, and David, who have to live off a bowl of cereal? My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I'm going to prepare some eggs in a basket. It's eggs, it's toast, it's what you need for breakfast.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and listen, I of the meals served in this episode, I think Danielle's coq au vin looked better, so I'm going to go with leftover coq au vin for breakfast.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I am definitely serving peanut butter pancakes and guessing right on what Claire's favorite food is.
Nice. I never thought of playing to the audience, but that's great.
Yeah. Auntie Claire, here's your peanut butter.
Yeah. And it's not imaginary.
It's a real David Shepherd move, I right? gotta say.
God bless that David. I hope he's okay. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. This podcast is an ideal companion if you're re-watching the ABC series Lost with us or visiting the island for the very first time, because each episode comes in sections for your listening pleasure. First, there's a calm section that only discusses the preceding episodes, so this week, everything but the finale, and avoids all spoilers from the finale. And then there's a second section called The Storm. For the last week on Lost, it's a storm of spoilers discussing this week's episode in the context of having seen the finale and over a decade of Lost fandom. For our final finale podcast episode, not the final episode of the podcast, don't worry, we'll get to that. We're going to post a little later next Saturday evening in the U.S. because we have our extended group live watch. The finale's a long one in our Storm Slack. How do you join that finale Storm Slack watch with us, you ask? Why, you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There you could find ways to subscribe to us for a monthly fee, and at any level you get access to that Slack and the watch along. And when you subscribe to the service for the first time, if this is your first time joining us, you'll get instant access to our previous years of bonus content, which includes both the Lost and Game of Thrones eras. So tons of bonus content.
Over 380 items of bonus content exist on that Patreon.
That is a lot of bonus content. But we're not just, here wrapping up Lost and not necessarily stepping into the void with the best intentions. No, no, we have plans for you, the Lost Files, even though the show ends next week. Joanna, what's the future of this podcast look like for September?
We are doing a bunch of wrap-up episodes. I'm not sure how much wrap-up we did at the end of Thrones, honestly. I think we were like, let's get out of here. Yikes.
Our Thrones wrap-up was just Dave and I tired at the San Francisco airport.
But we're going to, we spent a couple years of the show, and we want to take some time to honor that. So we're going to have some special guests, come on and talk to us. We're definitely doing a mailbag episode because you guys have been sending all these great emails that, like, we don't have time to get to all of them, but I want to get to all of them. So I'm squirreling them away so that we can do a mailbag episode. We might even do some great debates. We're thinking about it. So, you know, we're just going to really marinate in the loss of it all in September. I think, especially since we sort of started this project with the idea of relitigating the finale, it might be nice to kind of draw that relitigation out. So that is what we will be doing. I don't know if you mentioned this, Dave, but we are going to be watching the uncut finale of Lost, which is on both Hulu and the DVD Blu-ray. So, like, make sure if you're going to watch with us, they're watching the right version. There's a couple versions on Hulu. So, like, look for the uncut version if you're going to watch along with us, etc. on Saturday. On that note, a bunch of people in our Slack have been talking about, like, maybe how they're going to celebrate, like if they're going to do a special drink or snacks or stuff like that. I gave you guys no prep on this, but do you have any, like, prep plans? Or are you going to make a cocktail, have a snack? What do you think?
Ooh, for the finale? This is a good question.
Starting at about Saturday morning, I will set my phone alarm for 108 minutes and type the numbers into my new clacky keyboard and then reset the alarm. And I'll just live a day in the hatch. It'll be great.
I wonder if you could just make some, like, spiked island river water where it's just like, you just take some water and you put something else into it and you just drink that. And now you're the protector of your own island. That could work.
Someone mentioned, like, specialty drinks, someone, you know, like a dark and stormy, something like that. Like, that's a fun thing to do. I found an article on spoonuniversity.com, website I've never heard of, which is all the characters have lost as alcoholic beverages. Oh. and they're not all winners, I will say, what list is, but my favorite has to be for Jack. The suggestion is white wine. So
that's that nice. One takes a second, but I like
really
it.
Love Jack in this episode, so I'm not here to bash on Jack, I promise. But
wait, is Locke like an old-fashioned, so you bite out the orange peel with your mouth and do a little smile, and then you have it with a orb-like ice cube in reference to his head?
It should be, but Locke is a Bloody Mary. After a night of drinking, a Bloody Mary can save your life. Just like Locke does for everyone on the island all the time. I don't know that Boone would agree with that, but okay. Ana Lucia's tequila on the rocks, of course. You know, etc. So Jacob is brandy. Ooh, Vincent Jello shots. Okay, I don't. It says nice, approachable, sweet, and only comes around on special occasions. Great. if you have plans, maybe I'll get some goldfish, like fish biscuits or anything. I don't know. So if you have plans for the finale drinks, snacks, let us know. We'd love to hear it. We'll be doing our best to be festive. So that's what's happening. And then what's happening beyond September, beyond sort of our, like, long wrap up of Lost, we genuinely cannot say yet. We want to tell you. We're not dragging out the mystery just to torture you. We just cannot tell you yet. Something biggish seems to be coming. We just can't wait to tell you about it. We just can't.
It's just currently locked in a hatch and someone lost the key.
So we're trying to get some explosives from a slave ship we found in the middle of the jungle.
We tried building a trebuchet.
It'll be a minute.
Hammer thing, and it just went terribly.
I'm the Michelangelo of the group that's just still staring at the hatch being like, I'm working.
Yeah. Dave's been painting with paint that you can only see in a black light. We're not sure why.
So if you have comments and suggestions about what you think we should be doing, you can email hostsystemandpodcast.com. Rest assured that when we know what we're doing, it will be announced on Twitter at Storm Podcast, on our website, stormpodcast.com. All of that will be true. We got a couple reviews, and listen, it's at the end here. We got a neg
what?
Here.
What?
Kind of. It's 4 stars from J. Mackiel. 4 stars, great pod with too much bias. There's so much love about this pod. The hosts are great. They have fun interviews and spoiler-filled discussion at the end of each pod, which I appreciate. Unfortunately, this doesn't pair well with my white wine joke. Unfortunately, their hatred of Jack has kind of soured me on the whole thing. As a Jack fan, I feel like they fundamentally misunderstand his character and their hyper-focus on his deficiencies is glaring compared to the way they hand-wave those of other characters. It makes for bad Jack discussion, but also bad Sawyer, Saeed, Kate, Locke, and even Sun discussion. I'm still giving them a 4 because there's a lot of good here. I really love the hosts, and despite having to grind my teeth through any Jack discussion, I keep coming back for the things I enjoy. Shout out to Joanna for leading some nuanced discussions, particularly the ones about Shannon, one of my early faves. Okay, this person's like in the beginning of our podcast, is what I feel like. So I think things will get better, but I'm glad that someone else appreciated her.
Well, depends where they are, how far along. If they haven't gotten to season 3 yet, then they might want to skip some episodes.
And then we got a couple other like really nice 5-star reviews. I don't want to linger too long because we just have like a lot to talk about. So I also have just a couple emails I want to hit. But once again, I'm saving a lot of these for the end because, timing. But Eve, who wrote in a couple weeks ago or maybe last week, wrote in this week to follow up on her previous email. So she writes, so I've finally seen Across the Sea. My verdict is meh. But this leads to a question and one of my pet peeves about the show. This is a show that was filmed in Hawaii, but has very few Pacific Islanders, even in background shots. If most people find the island by crashing there, wouldn't it be likely that the most common people to crash on the island would be locals? Based on the Latin and Across the Sea and the Egyptian temple, we can assume that the island was likely at some point in the Mediterranean. The first move of the island must have occurred later, once the Man in Black's donkey wheel was finished. In Richard's time, was the island in the Atlantic? We know the island in the South Pacific by the time of the Jughead. That's where much of the U.S.'s nuclear testing happened. When 815 crashes, we assume it's close to the Philippines, but by Ajira, it's now most likely further east between Guam and Hawaii. So is the island on a path to circumnavigate the globe? And once that complete, the world ends? How far does the island move? Thanks, Eve. This is a great question. It never occurred to me that like the island was closer to like Latin speaking inhabitants of the Roman Empire and or Egypt and stuff like that before it bopped over to the Pacific. Because it always seems like it's such a Pacific landscaped island. What do you guys think of this question?
Oh, I like this. This is a great question that I had not previously considered, but it does make sense because the island, as Eve explains, can move. I also think that there could just be an element of like, while Jacob is bringing people to the island, he's trying to, you know, because he's trying to prove something about humanity to a certain extent, or at least that's what we're led to believe until this episode. So he might just be like specifically trying to get people from different parts of the world to this island to, you know, run them all through the candidate test and see which ones pass. So I think it could be a combination of those two things. Can Jacob move the island is the big question that I emerged with.
What do you think, Dave?
I mean, I definitely have thought about the island being in the Mediterranean before. And then obviously when we saw the lamppost one season ago, the idea that the island can be tracked to a certain extent, if you like know what to look for after you've left it. I've always thought that like the island naturally moves and it's moving based on like sort of a self-preservation way. It's like a Brigadoon, except it's an island.
Like the heart of the island too. Like the cave, you can only find the cave with the glowing light if you know what to look for, sort of thing. Yeah.
And it's sort of like that on a global scale. Mm-hmm. So like to protect the light at some point in the history of all humanity, it was enough that it just be on an island, you know, but then everybody starts sailing across the Mediterranean and it's like, oh, maybe not here anymore. And it bloops somewhere else. And so it always is trying to avoid particular detection. I think that leaves me with the same question Neil has, because otherwise the island could kind of think for itself or is on some sort of pattern. But that would also lean more towards there being a lamppost station at all that's capable of tracking it. That would imply not Jacob moving the island. So I think it'd go either way. I don't think we have enough empirical evidence to answer what is moving the island.
First of all, I want t-shirts made that say always be blooping. That's a good life philosophy. Secondly, I like this idea of it sort of drifting. other than these big moves. Like the donkey wheel causes like a big move, but otherwise it's sort of just like gently drifting around in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
The idea, I mean, it does still beg the question, why is this tropical island so white? But that is the question we won't be able to answer without asking ABC a decade ago. So let's go to this next email from one of our listeners, Shruti. Shruti has done such a lot of interactive work with our Patreon listeners, making polls, like getting people's theories together. I think we've mentioned before it was originally her idea to do sort of this live watch sort of thing. So I'm really excited that she finally wrote us a story, an email, and it's titled My Lost Origin Story. If we haven't already made it clear, is a first-time watcher. So she writes, "Hi, Dave, Joanna, and Neil. So I was 7 when Lost premiered."
Waited to the end to hit us with that one. Thanks.
"I remember hearing so much of how great Lost was through middle school, high school, and beyond. I always intended to get around to it. One of my favorite teachers in high school described the experience of watching Lost live as it airs as so unique and special, and I always felt sad that I had missed it. I studied television in college, so I watched the Lost pilot at least 3 times. One of the times was in my history of television class. History of television was a required class for all students in my major, but it was split into 3 sections, the broadcast era, the cable era, and the web era. Because it involved viewing full episodes of television, the class was 3.5-hour lecture, and if you missed a class or left even to go to the bathroom, you dropped a letter grade. It was a lot. Anyway, our professor made us watch the pilot and then made us watch a recap of the first 4 seasons. He was all, 'This is the history of television. You need to know this stuff. There is no spoilers.' And I know I'm complaining to the wrong audience about this, but I'm still pissed. The only thing I remembered from the video was that they get off the island at some point, so I had my suspicions during the season 3 finale, but I still think that reveal / finale is one of my favorites. Apologies for the long story, but I type this all to ask, if you were a professor for this class and only focused on the web era, would you spoil Lost? What else would you put in the curriculum? We also watched the quote unquote college episode of The Sopranos, but only the Tony scenes, the dancing baby episode of Ally McBeal, a webisode of The Office, etc." So there's more to your email, but I was wondering if you guys had answers to that question.
Shows from the web era. Probably Battlestar Galactica, but I, because spoilers don't exist and it's all about execution, I would show them the
finale.
Not the finale, but there's the episode where they reveal like the final 5. Mm-hmm. That's probably the one. So it'd be that one, or it would be, I don't know, something from Breaking Bad. Probably not even like a season 1 Breaking Bad. Be more of like a season 2 or 3 Breaking Bad episode.
Dave?
Yeah, it'd be tough. I mean, I like all those shows that Neil's talking about, but in terms of like doing like the spoiling thing, Lost is one of those weird cases where like that's kind of the conversation of the show. If you are in a television class and you're doing that abbreviation thing, maybe not all the first 4 seasons. That kind of seems a little intense. But like even now doing a rewatch, I think season 1 and season 2 are incredibly interesting in terms of a show trying to reckon with its popularity and being a mystery show and also not being able to be a full sci-fi show. So I would maybe spoil the first 2 seasons of Lost if I was doing a web era, what have you. But then also,
or my,
like, all of
my
Fringe.
Whole class would just be, here's Lost.
Here's Lost.
I think this might sound like a not so humble brag, but here's what I'll say. One time I was informed that GIFs that I made for my coverage of Westworld season 1 were being used in a USC course about how we watch television now. And a student sent me photos from the class of like my GIFs on an overhead like for display in a lecture hall. And it's one of the weirdest things I've ever experienced in my life. But I think Westworld and Mr. Robot and a few other of the like theory shows, like the way in which theory shows interact with like the Reddit audience, I think is a, and Lost is a really proto example of that. But like, I think some of the even later shows where eventually the creators start like acting in dialogue with the Reddit detectives, et cetera. I think that's an interesting thing to explore. So I would do Westworld for sure. Something like that. Mm-hmm. All right. So Shuthi goes on to say, at the end of senior year, we watched the pilot part one in my writing the 1 hour drama class, where literally all we did was watch TV pilots. And little do you know, one of my favorite podcasts announced they were planning on covering Lost. I did not know that Shuthi was still in college when we were doing Thrones. Anyway, I figured it was the perfect time to finally start watching. My twin and I were waiting on a late train in Penn Station one day while I was watching The Moth. She asked if she could join me and got hooked too. A couple months later, we flew to different cities for different jobs, but we discussed Lost for hours on the phone, discussing Lost with her, making bets and predictions in the Patreon Slack, and overanalyzing every little clue has been so much fun. Lost has been such a comfort for me, helping to distract me with theories and predictions during the past terrible months/years. I feel like I've really gotten the live watching experience my high school teacher told me about, and it's all thanks to the three of you. Thank you so much for giving me a live watch experience 17 years later. I'm so incredibly grateful. Love, Shuthi. Yes. Aww. My best friend has said she didn't bother watching Lost because she knows the spoiler. And this entire watch, I keep trying to figure out what that spoiler was without actually having her answer the question. Was it them getting off the island? The incident? Right now, I feel like she's referring to what was revealed in Across the Sea, but I still won't let her answer until August 28th. So soon. PPS, I'm sorry. It was such a long email. Shuthi, by the way, this is like, compared to some emails we get, this is practically sprightly. But I think I know. Here's what I'll say. And I think I can say this. I think I know what Shuthi's friend is referring to, and I think her friend might be wrong. That's what I think. I don't know.
We'll have to save that as one of our potential debate topics. What is the spoiler?
What is the spoiler? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like if you go back and you listen to, if that's something you decide to do, Trudy, like old Storm things, you will be very pleased by us stumbling through trying to talk about the first season of this show while also being like, well, and eventually they'll get the and forgot I have to beep all that.
Yeah, so many were beeped in those early seasons.
So many beeps.
All right, so that is it, I think, for all the things that I want to say. So that means, Neil, it's time for me to ask you, what happened on Lost this week?
Ooh. What happened indeed? This episode, What They Died For, was written by Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz and Elizabeth Sarnoff. It was directed by Paul Edwards, another longtime Lost veteran. And it aired on May 18th, 2010, taking place on day 13, following the arrival of Jira Flight 316 on the island. On the aforementioned island, in the wake of the submarine's destruction, Jack and crew decide that they need to kill Flock. But first, they need to get Desmond out of that damn well. Along the way, Ghost Jacob shows up to reveal himself to all of the remaining 815ers and explain why he needs someone to take over as protector of the island. Jack volunteers, drinks some river water, and unlocks the location of the light cave. Elsewhere, Ben, Richard, and Miles return to Dharmaville to retrieve some C4 from Ben's secret closet, only to be interrupted by Chuck Widmore and his helpful friend Zoe. Moments later, Flock shows up and everybody panics. After everyone else either hides or runs off, Richard goes out to talk to Flock and gets smoke punched. Then, Ben switches sides long enough to give up Widmore and Zoe. Goodbye to those characters. In the flash sideways, Jack continues to bond with his son David and his half-sister Claire as they prepare to attend a big concert later that evening. And before he heads off to work, Jack receives a phone call from Desmond pretending to be an Oceanic Airlines rep saying that they finally found his father's coffin. Wow, took him a while. Back at the high school, Ben catches Desmond once again stalking Mr. Locke back at the scene of the crime. And as Dr. Linus calls for help and yells for someone to call the police, Desmond gets out of his car and punches him so hard that he begins experiencing some new memories. Later on, Ben spends the evening hanging out with his favorite student, Alex, and her mother, Danielle Rousseau, who we haven't seen in 38 episodes? Yeah, 38. Fresh off his punchification of Ben's face, Desmond visits James and Miles at the police station, confesses to hitting Locke with his car, and gets locked up alongside Saeed and Kate. And as the three are later being transported to the county jail, they escape with the help of a cop named Donna Lucia and a rich guy named Hurley onward to the concert in a dress. It all ends back out in the jungle, where Ben and Flock visit the well where Desmond had been residing for most of the season. And even though Desmond is gone, the man in black seems happy to know that he's still alive because, as we find out, Des is the guy who's going to help him destroy the island. I have multiple fun facts. My first fun fact for this episode is that this episode was first shown at an event called Lost Live, The Final Celebration, which occurred 5 days prior to it airing on television. And while I did not attend this event, I do have a poster for it. It's one of my all-time favorite posters from one of my all-time favorite artists, Kevin Tong. And it's from the event, and it's a thing. It's like a movie theater, and it's got Hurley in his Dharma jumpsuit with the Dharma fan. It's just great. And it hangs right outside the office where I'm currently recording this podcast. My double bonus fun fact is that this is the only episode of Lost with three credited writers, which I totally did not know prior to this, and I guess that tracks. We've had many episodes with two writers, some episodes with one writer, but none with three until this. This week's calm question, place to start for us. There's a scene that was cut from this episode that featured Locke and Claire. It was supposed to be in the beginning of the episode, and it involved Claire sort of refusing to help Locke kill the remaining candidates, which, you know, could have gone either way with the way Claire's been going this season. Here's my question for you. Do you think they should have left that in to explain where Claire was? Or is it okay that they hashtag kind of forgot about Claire? Let's start this week with Joanna. What do you think?
I think it's okay. I mean,
it was cut for time.
Claire's kind of just down the metaphor. Well, I don't know. Well, I think it's actually a question I can better answer in the finale. Once you see the finale, because, I mean, spoiler alert, Island Claire is in the finale. So that, sure. So we'll see Island Claire again, right? And so I can't quite remember what state we find her in when we pick back up with her, and whether or not that bridging information would be helpful. Do you know what mm-hmm. I mean? So.
Yeah. Yeah. Curious to hear what Dave has to say as well. I think that, if this show were being made now, of course, it would be like a Disney Plus streaming show. And they probably would have left something like that in, because they would have not had to stick to exactly 43 minutes or 42 minutes.
Yeah, Dave, and they love giving us answers that aren't actually answers we were asking for. So, of course, that would have been left in. No, I say cut it. Cut it. It's make this felt... And it's better, I think, that this episode spends its time on the island just as much with Ben as it does with the candidates. And I really think that the way the smoke monster needs to be debuted here is the smoke punch to Richard. Mm-hmm. And so knowing that he's already like wandering around doing things is a lot less interesting than him just rowing up and then smoke punching somebody. I like that better. He's menacing now. They're finally mm-hmm. leaning into treating him as the villain, because they thought for a while maybe we would not know he was the villain. But now that we're, you know, the antagonist box has been checked, I just want more of it, because it's like Terry O'Quinn's so good at it. And it's like eye raises to Ben when Ben apparently surprises him. Well, I was going to ask where he wanted to start, but that's where we're going to start. We're going to start with Ben going back to Dharmaville, giving up the Widmore and Zoe, but more importantly, his showdown with Man in Black. And Man in Black has now come to basically ask him to kill the other candidates after... We know now, having cut, asking Claire to do the thing. It seems like Ben's a little more willing to kill people. And lucky, at least for Ben, who might be pulling a game, might not be pulling a game. The people that are nearby him at the particular time are people that he wouldn't mind killing, namely Widmore. And who cares about Zoe? No one cares about Zoe.
Right. You'll note that Ben did not do anything to keep Miles around. So I think that's good. That's a good sign for Miles. It's like he's on Ben's good side because Ben was like, sure, run off into the jungle, Miles. It's fine.
Yeah. I think Miles is just here, A, to remind us that Miles is here, but B, so we could have that touchstone moment of Ben figuring out where Richard buried his daughter, so that that way we could emotionally reconnect to him shooting Widmore and maybe not lose the stuff we liked about Ben when he cried for Alana and maybe sort of got his life back together. Joanna, Ben's character, I think you would like it in this episode, especially with the sideways stuff on happening. Does it read as consistent to you?
I do and I don't. I mean, like, I like, you know, I mean, Michael Emerson's always, what, freaking fantastic. And there's two incredible moments here for Ben. There's he doesn't get to save his daughter, right? Mm-hmm. And there's also in the sideways, when Dr. Linus, when Danielle says, you know, you're the closest thing to a father she's had, and he looks at Alex and he has this like tearing up moment. All of that stuff, great, you know, Michael Emerson making a typical meal of everything. It is tough to watch someone who just went through like a hard won redemption arc with the whole like digging his grave and Alana being like, I'll take you and all that sort of stuff like that, seemingly swing back to a bad, you know, back in the arms of John Locke as he was for much of last season. So, you know, that feels a little like what's happening here, what's going on. But I do like how he's just like, no, Widmore, I'm not teaming up with you. Just because we have a kind of a common threat doesn't mean we're on the same team sort of thing. So does that answer your question?
Yes. No, yeah. He still sent Kimi. He's still the guy. Mm-hmm. Kimi, and he still got to, you know, punch Kimi a lot. So Ben's getting his revenge on all sides. He's pretty good at that. But it also, I guess the one reason it would work for me is when Locke comes up and says, you know, I want you to kill some people. And Ben rightly says, like, why would I do that? That's a hard ask, considering the writers know that at the end of the episode, he's going to be like, well, Ben, I'm going to blow up the island, because he promises him the island. So the whole thing is shaky about Ben being there in the first place. If it was anybody else but Charles Widmore in that room, I don't think Ben would have even stuck around. Ben might have tried to miles away. Or whatnot, but like that's one of the only characters I wouldn't mind Ben killing, because Charles Widmore was kind of a dick until he wasn't, but we didn't get to spend a lot of time with any part of him that wasn't a dick to really paper over the horrible things we've seen in Desmond's flashbacks and sort of his creepy vibe with Dark Sun off the island.
Yeah,
I have a follow-up question for you. Oh, sorry,
go ahead. Yeah. I was just going to say I'm thankful that we got rid of Charles Widmore, because he's been pretty worthless here in season six, well, other like, than yeah, the cool magnet, the giant wooden magnet thing. That was fun.
The solenoids, right? This is my... well, that was my question that I had in the notes, which is like, what purpose has Widmore served in this season other than bringing Desmond to the island?
Mm-hmm. He brought the submarine that then caused us a great deal of pain.
Oh, it's true. It's true. Yeah. But they could have just had that. They could have just had a Dharma submarine lurking about.
Right. They had a sub before. So,
yeah. And like, Zoe's certainly useless. But like, I mean, Widmore is so tied to the mythology of the island. He's so tied to Ben. This idea that Jacob came to visit him is like wild and huge, but feels like it's not really.
That should have been a moment. That should have been like a moment that we spent time with. Exactly. Either seen it or allowed Ben to react more to it, because that's got to piss Ben the fuck off.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that Jacob showed up, and not only did he show up, but he told him everything and told him like exactly what to do. Ben never got direct like answers to any of his questions.
What about you?
Yeah, exactly.
Jacob. But the thing that I want to say about Ben, I mean, I don't mean to hop all over the place, but like, because I mentioned Danielle and Ben, I just need to get out in front of this and say, I feel like this episode is trying to make me ship Danielle Rousseau and Dr. Linus, and I am wildly against it. I am very, very not here for it. And I've said this before, and I've had some of our listeners sort of push back on me, but like when Danielle's like, I'll use fewer onions next, she says less, but I'm going to say fewer. I'll use fewer onions next time. And he like reacts like, oh, next time, the next Coco-Van night. Oh, we can make a little family. You, me, and Alex. I was like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Not in any sideways that exists. So that's all. I just need to say.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think it's a testament to how good those two actors are that they still have some chemistry in that moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you think about that one for too long, it falls apart real quick. Because remember when Yikes. He stole her baby?
Yikes. There's a kidnapping joke. She's like, you're coming with us even if we have to kidnap you. I'm like, oh, har. What the heck is that?
Anyway, but don't we like remember that Wigged Ben was against the whole thing and it was attractive Charles Widmore's fault from the very beginning?
Oh, it's sure. True. Hot Charles Widmore. Blame him forever.
Well, I'm more willing to because he's the one who gets shot by Ben in this episode. And sure. Like, it's good. It's fine. Widmore goes in the maybe wasted character pile just because there are a lot of interesting story beats here. He finally tells us what's going on. He faces down the smoke monster. We get an idea that maybe the smoke monster isn't just going to kill everybody, which is what Widmore's been saying. He starts like whispering in his ear, and then he gets shot by Ben. All should be gigantic, momentous moments. And instead, they're just sort of there and like packed in between several scenes on the island where people are just talking about where they're going to go next, which isn't withholding information necessarily, but isn't great story work, I don't think.
On top of that, no one addresses the part where Richard gets smoke punched. Yep. Everyone's just cool with that for
He's
now.
He's just gone. He pulls his very Richard. Own Lapidus, and we just don't care anymore.
Right? Just, Richard got done dirty. That's all I'm saying.
Richard's off screen now.
Listen, we're boiling it down to the essential, the core four. You know what I mean? So the mm-hmm. cork four. I don't know. Anyway,
the cork four. Well, let's stick in the sideways where things are a little bit less mystical, and we just have serial killer Desmond Hume running around being super creepy. In ways that I guess play maybe a little bit charming, because it's, you know, we know Desmond and we've kind of glommed on now that he and Hurley are fully on the trolley of getting people to remember the island time. But how that manifests is pretending that they found Jack's dad's body, which that seems creepy. Restocking Locke in his car, looking like he's just ready to go for a second time, so much so that Dr. Ben Linus has to get him stop him. Dr. Ben Linus gets pummeled in the face, and then he manages to turn himself in and very creepily gets everybody out of jail. I'm into that. And then once again goes right back to creepy with like a sports car and that fucking dress and like a what? Time to get dressed and go to a concert, Kate. It's so creepy.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because like we get Desmond's end game here, and you know we want all of these we want him to help sort of bridge the gap between the realities. However, the way he executes his plan is with all of the charm and panache of like Robert Patrick from Terminator 2. Like he's like that guy. It's like, especially when he's like doing the fake American voice. I don't know why that reminded me. I'm just like, why is he so calm while he's doing all these terrible things?
Well, he just like punches the shit out of Ben on the hood of his car. Mm-hmm. I mean, he took some glee in that because he has reason to want to punch Ben in general. But like, yeah, it's a real moment there for Desmond Hume. Or when he's like, but also how does Desmond know everything that he knows? I guess the answer is the unending resources of Hugo Reyes.
Being the world's greatest fixer for sideways Charles Widmore.
Mm-hmm. True. Those powers combined. But the fact that he strolls into this like LA County jail and is like, yep, there's Kate and Saeed and only Kate and Saeed, exactly the two people I was looking for. Yeah, interesting.
Well, off screen, he has Minkowski is still his research assistant. Yeah. He's feeding him all the police blotter.
But I'm glad that Dave raised the dress, so I didn't have to be the one whining two questions in a row. But like, I really hate that dress. Yeah. And also, spoiler, you're going to see it on Kate, and you'll hate it even more once you see it on her. I just hate that someone else bought that for her. If she bought it for herself, all power to you. But it's...
The show really likes giving Kate dresses against her her will.
Not a fan. At least On Island Kate, I think, has a little better stuff to do in this episode.
Sure.
No, Kate does. Not about Kate. But Kate is like the one yelling at Jacob, and she's like, fuck you, Son and Jin are dead. What the fuck? Like, mm-hmm. When she's yelling at Jacob, that's my favorite Kate that we've seen.
Yeah. In a long time. And it could be the gunshot wound in the first scene, but she seems to be the most deeply affected by the loss of Jin and Son and Sayid.
Well, she is a mother, Neil. I don't know if you knew that about Kate.
Which is a huge strike in Jacob's book.
Only she can understand what it's like to be a mother.
Yeah, and only now can we understand why Jacob is like, you know what? Fuck moms.
True. Fair enough. Yeah, no, I mean, like, obviously the big, something that people still talk about in terms of this episode that really pisses people off is this idea that Jacob crossed Kate's name off the wall because she became a mother. Mo Ryan wrote a great piece when Across the Sea originally debuted about the women in Lost and how they're shunted into two roles, which is mother or lover. And like, there's not a lot of space in between. And when we talked about this with Kate too, like the problem with Kate being that she was initially a J.J. Abrams character and then J.J. left the show and then they don't know what to do with Kate, et cetera. So that's why I said like her yelling at Jacob is like the closest it feels like to original premise Kate, like a Kate that's more in charge, a Kate that is like a pissed off protector. You know, all that sort of stuff, rather than like, I crossed your name off the wall because you became a mom.
Well, and what's what's really, I think, even more bothersome is the added bonus of Jacob saying, but you know, that doesn't matter. You could still be the protector of the island if you want to. Because it's like, man, come on. These rules suck.
Yeah, and like him crossing her name, he's like, it's just a piece of chalk, but like, what Kate being vulnerable is a motivator for Sawyer and Jack earlier in the season when Sawyer's like, Kate's, you know, maybe he can't kill us, but he can kill Kate because she's not a candidate anymore. So we have to protect her. Like, that's the thing that Sawyer says, right? And it's just like, this is fucked.
Well, so, yeah, it's also like, it's just a piece of chalk. Sure, it meant that you were the killable candidate, but if you want the job, go ahead.
And also, let's point out, I mean, like, he might be a deadbeat dad, but Sawyer's a father. So, like, oh, you became a mother, Kate, so obviously you can't, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, fuck Sawyer, he's a dad. I know, like, it's very silly. I don't like it, but here we are.
Maybe Jacob's just, like, really curious about the concept of fathers. Maybe that's why he brings so many people with daddy issues.
What is a father?
Right.
It seems like everybody dislikes theirs. Maybe if I bring them to this island, they'll be able to figure it out. Maybe I'll be able to figure it out.
He's like, yeah, I want to talk to all these people with bad dads because that concept is very foreign to me. However, moms, not a fan.
Not a fan of moms.
I did like the pilot mirroring with Jack sewing Kate up. I thought that was like mm-hmm. good. Yeah.
Well, and
there was a light touch to it. You know what I mean? Not like, remember. Yeah,
this is, I think, one of the things I like most about this episode is the way it sort of eases in. You know, we get these very sort of calm, and a lot of Giacchino really brings this out in the very sort of somber score, but you get these very calm, sad performances on those first, you know, those opening minutes on the beach. And honestly, that kind of works given the way the last two episodes have gone. You know, we had the huge shock of all the death and destruction two episodes ago, and then we had just a wild left turn last week. So it's like, let's slow down and let's sort of simmer with our four survivors on the beach. And I think that's super effective. Like, it really sort of calmed me down into this episode.
Maybe It was trying to lull you into a sense of security. Sure.
Because then Richard gets smoke punched and things off.
And then Jacob sits down and is like, here are the rules. And like right after this episode airs, it's like, huh, we got the rules. And now many, many years later, I'm like, they just sat down and told us like things that didn't answer any questions. A lot of my key questions are still not answered, or like everything's sort of like vague. Like there was some mumbling, there was some Latin mumbling, and then he drank some water and it's like, now you're like me. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, I know we saw that in Across the Sea, but like, at what point did Jacob learn what to mumble? It's like, there's a whole bunch of, every question just leads to another question. Like Mother warned me.
She did tell you that. She told you. Okay. I have two things I want to say. First of all, I read this great article written at the time about the kinds of questions that remain on Lost that I would love to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
But also I want to, I usually don't respond to things like this, but someone on Twitter kind of yelled at me for something I said in last week's episode, because I said something about like the ritual and water, and they're like, it wasn't water, it was wine. You just spoiled the fact that they use water in the next episode. And I was like, listen, guys, that's not a spoiler. That's, everything's fine. We're fine here. Okay. So the questions thing. So there's this article that came out right around after Across the Sea, but before this episode, called A Lost Week of Questioning Answers. A bunch of people, like, as is their wont, as we get to the finale of this big mystery, mystery box show, a lot of people are like, here are the lingering questions that we need to have answered. Emily Vanderbilt wrote a great one, et cetera, et cetera. But Jason Mattel, on his Just TV blog, wrote an article about what kind of questions remain. So mysteries remain. So here are his four categories. Number one, outrigger mysteries. Dangling narrative threads that could be explained but do not really impact our understanding of the characters, their core arcs, or the island. What would really be learned by knowing who the shooters were? It would be cool to close the loop, but ultimately is a form of fan service, providing a moment of enjoyable but inessential meta. So that outrigger mystery, referring to the fact that when our Losties are time hopping, they get shot out in an outrigger on the water, and we always presume we see the other side of it. We don't. Alan Sepinwall interviewed Damon and Carlton and asked them about the outrigger. And he said, there are a bunch of outriggers in this final season. They're like, we're not answering the outrigger question. We couldn't make it work. And Alan's like, but you put a bunch of outriggers in your final season. That feels like you're messing with us. And then Damon says, we can't entirely deny that we're taunting you. So that's the outrigger mystery.
And there you have it. That's Lost communing with its audience there in this last season.
Okay, mystery number two, mechanical mysteries, focused on how things work. While some of these might be interesting to understand, they are ultimately less than necessary and might be disappointing upon reveal, as with the Michael Hurley conversation about the Whispers. In Across the Sea, we saw the origins of the donkey wheel as a plot of the Man in Black and the Roman villagers to channel the source, that glowy light, and escape the island. Such mechanical mysteries speak to larger genre issues. My friend Ted Freeman posted the following to Twitter last week. My take on the Lost backlash: sci-fi fans have finally realized they're watching a fantasy story. Sci-fi demands answers. Fantasy accepts mystery. Fantasy does accept mystery, especially about mechanics and causality. The much derided "a wizard did it" explanation doesn't fly for sci-fi fans. So what do you guys think about that, like, mechanical mystery question?
Yep.
Yeah.
Wizard did it. Well,
it's a glowy light at the center of the island.
The tough part about the donkey wheel that I don't know if we talked about this last week is that, so we now know that the Man in Black eventually finished the donkey wheel, but he never was able to try and use that to escape the island. Like, it exists in working form later in time. So it's like a question that just immediately goes to a dead end if you start thinking about it. It's like, wait, why did he then spend hundreds more years on this island?
Because he ain't got nobody.
Yeah.
I guess that's true.
He's in the cave with his
but I do like that skeleton. That I presume he project directed the right, finishing of that. Like he had to unearth the well and like, you know, figure out how to finish his project. And maybe he thought he would try it.
One of the people turning it, like he got like three people to turn it and he also turned it. Or like he was sitting on the back of the donkeys he had turning it or something. And it's like everybody flashes away and he's like, oh shit.
Damn it. Still here.
Then he goes outside and the sun's in a different place in the sky. And he's like, oh shit, am I in the Mediterranean?
Oh my God, why are there goats here all of a sudden? All right. A third type of question might be called mythology mysteries. In the long history of the island, how did particular things unfold? For instance, we know that the island had a very large statue of Egyptian god Tewerit and a lot of hieroglyphics. Given that Across the Sea seemingly took place in Roman times, we must assume that these predate Jacob and the Man in Black, and I also assume that we'll never be told that tale. Any responses to that mythology mystery question?
I still think there's a possibility, given the history of time, that what we saw could have been pre-Egyptian.
Okay. Neil? But in general, mythology mysteries.
Oh, yeah, no. I like, those are the ones that I thought I wanted the answer to, and at the end of the series, I realized that was the red herring I was following the most. I wasn't as much a sci-fi guy, I was a mythology guy. Mm-hmm. And like, that is the kind of place that you could, that's where some of the greatest weird, crazy town thinking happens, I think. That's the sort of thing that eventually leads us to a movie like Rogue One, even though Star Wars just says, yeah, we got these plans, and the Clone Wars happened. Yeah. Many Bothans died. Well, we still haven't seen the Bothans. That's the sad part.
That's true.
We'll get there. Well, and I think that that's one of the things. You get to the end of Lost, and, you know, these are some of the mysteries that you realize it wasn't that they were building out a mythology so much as they were sprinkling in iconography. And some of it's there on purpose and some of it's there to, I don't know, not necessarily to misdirect, cool. But like some of it's just there to look interesting. And I think, you know, sure, a future Lost show, like a sequel show could really do some stuff with that. But I don't think that Damon and Carlton, especially in this final season, were interested in like going that much deeper on the mythology outside of what we saw in last week's episode. You know?
Some of that iconography relates to like some of the inspirations for Lost, which include Twin Peaks, which has some like, you know, Red Room iconography or like, you know, owl and iconography or whatever it is, or Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, which it should become like abundantly clear that that is something we are interacting with at this point. You know, you think about like the Grail trials and stuff like that, like all of that sort of stuff is kind of the vibe they're going for in doing something like the temple or whatever. It just winds up being a frustrating story.
Well, it's like the back in, what was it, the third season when we were in the brain brainwashing room that the mm-hmm. others had. It's like if you were to slow that down frame by frame and watch all of the things that pop up on the screen, some of that stuff has come back and is relevant. Some of it are like things that the Man in Black has said, but not all of it matters, right? Like a large portion of it is just there to exist and potentially confuse you. And so I think that, you know, it's one of those things, like if you're trying to piece together a coherent, well-formed mythology based on just what we're seeing in the show, you're going to run into a lot of dead ends. And I think that's fine. You know, I guess that's sort of the point of the sci-fi versus fantasy thing. It's like, this is a fantasy show. Some of it's just a mystery. Some of it's just window dressing. And we're not going to get all those answers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Right. We had a sci-fi time travel season.
Right. And that was great at answering all the stuff from season two, when they actually were sitting in a room and building a mythology because they needed this show to go on. But then they sort of like closed it down. They closed down the sci-fi parts a little bit. And then season six comes along to wrap up the rest of the story. And you're like, oh, wait, but like, what about the numbers? They're like, chalk wall. Just they're on the wall. The numbers are on the wall.
Mm-hmm. Jacob just has a thing for numbers.
There's There's one more category here, and then I have a fifth category that I actually think is the most important one. So the final category for this writer is plot mysteries, gaps that are crucial to understanding how the story world works and that we cannot fully fill on our own without some additional narrative explication. The reality status of the sideways stories are the core example, but it also includes an explanation of Widmore and Eloise's role in the island and time travel narrative, what Jacob and the Men in Black were doing with their dual lists of candidates on the cave in the lighthouse, what really happened in the incident, and what Desmond is up to. If these aren't explained, I'll be pissed because the narrative has framed them as key enigmas that need answering to piece together the action, especially in season six, and they are sufficiently obscure that I cannot simply craft my own answers that make consistent sense. So what do you guys think about this plot mysteries category?
Yeah, I sympathize with the writer's feeling.
Neil?
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely think there's some, I don't know, I don't like using the term plot holes, but there are some places where they just didn't fill in. And you know, with a show that's gone on this long and has had this many episodes, I think that's unavoidable. It's not to say that, like, you know, the writers were, you know, correct in not answering some of those things, or, you know, that it makes the show better or worse. It's just sort of the nature of trying to weave together a mystery show over six seasons.
I sort of feel like some of those, depending on when this article was written, but if it was written after What We Died For, some of those I've learned in the rewatch, we kind of like have enough answers for. Like, I feel very comfortable now, having done the rewatch with you guys, of Eloise and her motivations throughout time, you know, trying to keep this time thing loop intact to protect all of existence, and it makes her sacrifice her son. Like, that reads very well for me. I don't know if we necessarily need more of that, but as we just talked earlier in this episode, would love some more Charles Widmore answers, because that seems really inconsistent with what we've got. So I think it kind of goes both ways. I think sometimes I also don't like plot holes. Plot inconsistencies come when the show is trying to make something work minute to minute, and accidentally those things have ripples because there's just only so many hours of television. Like, how many times do we want to go back and consider the incident if the show has moved on from its sci-fi angle?
Right. So the last mystery, and this is where this will be unsurprising to people, but this is, I think, the most important one. And this is where I will say I think Lost really almost fully comes through, which is character mystery. And the character mystery is this. It's, who are these people? Mm-hmm. Are they capable of what choices are they capable of making? Are they capable of change? And in watching them on their journey, have we learned anything about ourselves and our ability to change or progress past mistakes we've made, or all that sort of stuff? That I think is what Lost leans into being most interested in the end game. And it can be frustrating, especially, I think there's some whiplash because the show for a long time trained its audience to look out for these other mysteries, and maybe some people forgot about focusing on this question of who these people are. And that, I mean, not to spoil it, but I think that's what the leftover finale, why it feels so much more satisfying to me, because even though I love the last finale, but the leftover finale is like so much sleeker in its, listen, this is going to be about people and their choices and all that sort of stuff. Does that make sense? So mm-hmm. What do you guys think about that idea of character?
Yeah, because I mean, and this is something that I was thinking about as we were watching this episode. One of the most important questions, especially in this final season, is why these people, right? So, like, what was important about these people that made them candidates and made them, you know, get into the crosshairs of this island god, Jacob, with mommy issues? And this is something that they sort of start to scratch away at in that campfire scene, which is, Jacob says, you know, I brought you from lives that were imperfect, and you were you know, people who seem to be going through your lives without purpose. And, you know, he stops just short of being like, you were all lost and I found you sort of shit, right?
You were all losers.
like the real, you know, and that's the show right there. That's the title of the show. It's like, these people were lost and Jacob brought them to the island and here's their adventure.
I mean, so he does say that's what they died for.
Right. But, you know. So it's like, you know, I think the character, the whys behind why these characters were so important that they had to go on this insane adventure, to me, is, yes, the number one question that Lost had to answer. And I think that, you know, even with just what we've seen of season six so far, they've done a pretty good job of answering that. And, you know, we'll get into it next week. But, you know, I feel like they kind of stick the landing, too. So,
Dave.
Yeah, I think it's both why these people, and like we've been talking a lot about the phrase arced out this season, but like you have to let each character arc out, because in order to get a full accounting of this show's characters, the end point is as important. Like you're talking about it as presenting it as a mystery. That endpoint means that that's the difference between satisfying and not satisfying. If you don't provide it, you've automatically gone into unsatisfying. If you do provide it, then it's a toss-up on how much runway you've, you know, got yourself there. Are you going to burn down King's Landing when you hear the bells or not?
I was so funny. I was about to bring up Thrones. I think I can say that I talked to a friend of the podcast, Brian Cogman, today about Lost, and we were talking about Jamie Lannister and Sawyer and how they're connected and why those particular arcs are so compelling for people. I do think that Sawyer is arced out a little bit in the show already, but the reason why a Sawyer and a Jamie are so compelling, because there are going to be moments where they're going to have to make a choice, and we are on the edge of our seat as to whether or not they're going to choose to do the right thing. Because we've seen them do the wrong thing so many times, do you know? And like similarly with Jack, this is a question I asked Damon when we talked to him between the last two seasons, and he got a little defensive, I think, as he always does when he talks about Jack, because he relates so much to Jack. But I was like, is the reason Jack is so shitty for so long because you're saving the real movement of his arc for this final season? Like in this episode, you know, Jack says stuff to Sawyer like, I'm often wrong. Or, you know, when Sawyer's like, it was my fault, Jack's like, it's not your fault. Like, gives him the old Robin Williams and Good Will Hunting. It's not your fault. Like, this is good movement for Jack's character. Mm-hmm. And we just had to wait a really long time. And that's why he's so fucking annoying for so long, I think, because they saved the real development for this final season. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah. Well, and I think that the thing that really, you know, Jack's been changing in incremental small ways over the course of the first five seasons. And then the incident is what really changes things for Jack, you know? And so like Jack being wrong in the biggest way possible, right? Causing the death of Juliet, is what is sort of the climax. And now we're seeing Jack's fallout, Jack's full character change. So, you know, I think you can go into this episode and not at all be surprised that when it's time to decide who's going to be in charge, Jack's like, this is why I'm here, you know, because he's finally sort of, he may finally have found his purpose, you know, and that's good to see, because he's been searching for it for a long, long time.
If nothing else, this isn't a corner, but it's a testament to the motion of Jack. The first season, we talked about how annoying he was. The third season, really down on depressed pill Jack / island cage Jack. All seems kind of weird. This week, I'm willing to say he's the best god the island's ever had that I've seen.
faint praise, but we'll take it.
He has a chance to break the cycle for being a terrible island god.
I think, you know, and they do that nice undercut of Sawyer saying, like, if you thought that guy had a god complex before, like, great, great burn from Sawyer, great undercut of this moment. But like, Jack's like, I'll do it, and I'm not even annoyed. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm just sort of like, it doesn't feel shitty. It feels good.
Yeah, well, and I think what makes that line from Sawyer great, one, it's Sawyer doing his Sawyer thing, which is mm-hmm. always fun. But it also feels like he's talking about a different, older version of Jack, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't feel like Jack has a God complex anymore, because we've watched him for now a full maybe season and a half defer to other people and be supportive and admit his mistakes. And so it's there to be funny, but it's also there to remind us that the Jack that Sawyer is joking about is gone, and this is a new Jack, and I like that about it.
I wanted to ask you guys also about this sort of to circle back to that conversation. I think it was the last one we had with Damon, but like, this is such a big moment where Jacob is talking about like anointing who's going to be the leader. I want to give you a choice, right? Something I never had, he says bitterly, petulantly, a classic Jacob child, man child. Like, I'll give you the thing that I never had is a choice, right? He had no choice. Mother just sort of like conscripted him into service. He didn't really understand what he was taking on. And he's like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to pass that generational trauma down to you guys. Howevskis. Has Jacob not been literally touching their lives since they were children? Like, he says, like, I plucked you out of bad lives, like lonely lives, all this sort of stuff like that. But like, to what extent has Jacob manipulated their lives to get them to that spot? You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, the lighthouse is watching Jack's childhood home. Like, you know, like
Jacob in Australia filling a large container with 4 billion beans, just being like, come on, Hurley, come on.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly rich as well, coming from the guy who waited until the last possible minute as the last of his ashes are burning away to come out and explain what the damn rules are on this island. This would have gone so much better if Jacob would have just shown up after the crash of Flight 815 and been like, sit around this campfire with me. I'm going to tell you this weird story, but at the end of it, one of you is going to be the island god. I mean, we wouldn't have six seasons of a show, but I think things would have went better for Jacob.
And I also think that, like, I think the showrunners didn't know always that they were going to do this thing about Jacob offering them a choice, because like, with someone like Kate deciding to come back to the island on the Ajira flight to find Claire, I do believe that that is Kate's choice.
Mm-hmm.
Saeed is literally handcuffed and marched onto the plane by Jacob's bodyguard, Alana. What choice did Saeed have? And Jacob also, I think, is responsible for Nadia's death. Like, what choice did Saeed have in being there? What choice did Jacob give him?
Yeah. Well, I mean, add it to the list of ways in which Saeed was done dirty by like, the island god.
What are you talking about, a choice, Jacob? So, like, all that goes back to, like, things that Damon has said to us about what happened at the beginning of Lost, which is that J.J. Abrams is like, come write a pilot with me. And then he says, I'm going to go make Mission Impossible, tag you're it. And then Damon Lindelof, who has only ever been a staff writer in a show, has to run a massive show for ABC. And then that show becomes the biggest like pop culture phenomenon in the world. And I think the quote that Damon gave us in the last interview we had with him is like, I just wanted to go sit on a beach and cry. Right. Like, that's how he felt. And so I think you can see that in like things that Jacob says and things that Jack say about like, not feeling like you have a choice, or I mean, this is a huge blessing, right? Like, Damon's very lucky. Like, we're not mm-hmm. like crying a lot of tears for Damon, but like, this is like the biggest point of stress in his life was like, how do I take care of this thing? How do I lead this thing? Am I capable of stuff like this? And when Jack asks Jacob how long he has to do it, Jacob's like, as long as you can. And that makes me think of like Damon and Carlton going to the network and being like, please let us finish this show. Jesus Christ. So I just think it's really fascinating to think about how all of this is like a real human person, artist, creative, trying to work out the meta stress of the existence of this show in the first place. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and doing it on what was at the time, especially at the time, you know, the biggest stage. There was not a more talked about show, even though its ratings were better at the beginning. Especially towards the end, there was not a more talked about or covered show than Lost. And that's error that it's very hard to understand how to operate sort of in that part of the stratosphere. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like, especially with the work that he's done since Lost, came to a pretty healthy place after going through, pretty rough spot there, trying to keep this show on the rails, you know?
Yeah.
And I do think it's a nice place to insert this sort of doubt, because this episode also has to set up pieces for a finale. So Jacob fireside chat, maybe a little bit inelegant, but I don't dislike it. Kind of like last week's episode. I'm not a huge fan of it overall, but I respect shooting for the moon in that way, which is like, we're here. We want to spend our 2.5 hour finale just like pummeling people with what the best parts of this show are. And that's never been the answers. It's always been like the characters, the mysteries, the whatever. So if we have to do the answers, God's going to just sit down and tell you the way it is. And you're not going to get to answer ask any questions, because you got to keep moving, because the smoke thing's going to destroy the island. Man, Jacob by the fire, guys, is another one of those scenes from season 6 that you will now always think about when you think about Lost, even though it's just right here at the end.
Like, when I think of Jacob as a shitty god, which I love to do, I think maybe no exchange encapsulates that better than Hurley being like, I've been waiting for you to show up. Where you been? And Jacob says, doesn't matter, I'm here now. Like, fuck you, God. What the hell? Where were you when we got on the submarine? Like, God damn it. Yeah.
You protected, like, Jack and I by making us spend the night outside of a lighthouse. And now you're just going to yada yada over Sunjin and Saeed. Don't like it. All right, but we're not done with the sideways now, even though we have touched about it with a little bit with Ben, because we start with good old Jack, who has discovered something we haven't seen since LAX. Isn't that right, Joanna? It's on his neck.
Oh, a cut on his neck. What's that cut? What's that doing there?
When did he cut himself?
It just happens. I didn't see him shave.
I didn't see him shave either. What's that doing there? Interesting.
And through a series of actions / Desmond being creepy, Jack's brought back to in contact with John Locke, who has had his perspective flipped by bruised-faced Michael Emerson, rocking that look with his crags and skin tone, as you do, manages to get Locke to go back to Jack, and a little bit of the good old man of faith comes out, specifically in that maybe they were all on the flight for a reason. Maybe this is all happening for a reason, which is classic season 1 Locke. Neil, how'd you feel about this sudden move forward of John Locke?
Well, I mean, I like the positioning of it, because if they were to just have a moment where John Locke is like, no, I do just want to be able to walk again, I think that's less impactful. It's also, it's weird. It gets into some weird, like, ableist territory.
Nope.
But the reason why John Locke ultimately comes back to Jack is because he's now starting to form a sort of conspiracy theory around the fact they were all on the same flight. He's starting to see meaning in that. And he's starting to let the universe sort of take over, which, as you said, Dave, is the most John Locke thing that we've seen John Locke do this entire season, right? Because we see the man in black wearing John Locke's face, and that's very confusing and different. But John Locke, like, keying in on the fact they were all on the same flight and starting to believe that the universe has some sort of plan for him and has put Jack in front of him for a reason, you know, that's it. That's the core of John Locke's character from the beginning of the show. And I think that that's really good. Like that is good stuff right there.
I think to circle back to that great email we got from our listener Beth last week about ableism and John Locke. I think the use of fix hits like lands with a clang every sure. time. You fix me, Jack fix you, like all that. And it's classic Jack Shepherd language. Like, I get it. I can fix this. I can do this, like, sort of thing. But it does really feel quite ableist to frame it in that fix way, you know? So mm-hmm. I think we both agreed with, but sort of slightly pushed back on Beth's email. And I will say, watching this episode, I was sort of like, yeah, you know, the Locke sideways stuff is really, really preoccupied with this mm-hmm. notion of fixing. So
yeah, for sure.
It's almost like they could be using some other sort of metaphor than fixing, like some sort of. Yeah, got it. Just a little punch.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just one of those things where, like, you can see the idea that they're going for, and yeah. then it's the execution. It's the tweaks of language that could have made it a little bit better. Which, you know, again, if they're making the show 10 years in the future, I think they would probably approach that different.
I hope so.
They now have me maybe in the Desmond position where it's like not 2 weeks in a row, but almost 2 weeks in a row. We've had Sideways Jack and Sideways Locke talking. And I'm just like, remember each other. You're saying the lines.
You're so close.
You should just punch them, Dave. Yeah. I'm sure that'll get you where you need to go.
I mean, apparently, according to Desmond, Desmond seems to be being very gentle with the jailbound losties, considering other people's trials by Desmond have been very physically taxing.
Maybe that's how Jack keeps getting that little cut on his neck. Desmond keeps sneaking into his apartment at night and just like cutting him a little bit and walking away.
Yeah, that's creepy. That sounds like Desmond.
Sounds like the Desmond I know, or maybe he sends Mikowski to do it. Can I talk about the most monstrous thing that Jack does in this episode?
Yes, mm-hmm. I yada yada'd over two capital line things in the notes.
No, it's okay. Go for it. No. Just like, I learned this from the Buffering podcast, to watch how people use milk in things. It's really bothersome. Jack puts his milk in a glass pitcher and it's just sitting on the table. What the fuck is that? Yeah. That is disgusting.
No one wants room temperature milk. I've never met anyone who's like, room temperature milk.
In an open topped pitcher. Like, what the fuck is that? And then also, yeah, I just wanted to mention that the all brand theory from Game of Thrones has entered the chat because David and Jack Shepherd are eating super brand cereal. So all Davids are one David and all brands are one brand, including super brand cereal. That's all.
Yes, maybe Bran and David are the same. We need a third series. So we're back at the Sideways. It looks like we're all heading to a concert. David is heading there. Hey, guys, David's mom's going to be there.
Can't wait.
David's mom. You remember? We do still know who that is yet.
Yeah, it's one of the few remaining mysteries.
Yep, that's it. All the other questions have been answered satisfactorily.
It's just, who's David's mom? I do love that moment, though, when David's like, don't be weird. Jack's like, I won't be weird. Then David just smiles. I mean, the David-Jack stuff is just really, really cute, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then Locke being like, he looks a lot like you. And I'm like, thanks, casting department. Good job. He really did. Really did do a good job.
David, I hope things work out for you. You must be protected and learn how to cook eggs in a basket or something. Jack's right. Opening cereal isn't making breakfast.
Yeah,
you'll learn
I agree
when you
with
get
Jack
good at making breakfast.
That's some real dad shit to say, which further endears us to Jack as a dad in the Sideways, but I agree as well. That's not making breakfast.
Yeah, that's another good thing about Sideways Jack, is he learned a lesson with David, and then it's just like, okay, cool. He learned a lesson. He changed. He became a better dad. I like that. Let Jack change. That should have been our rallying cry all along. Let Jack change.
Mm-hmm.
Don't keep putting him back in pills and beards.
Don't keep making him try to do his own surgeries. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. That was the bottom of a barrel moment. Joanna, it seems like we missed some things. Anything you really want to hit before we jump into the corners?
I got emotional when Richard told Ben that he buried Alex. Like a little, you know, a little I buried her moment.
Yeah, Richard, real stand-up guy. It's too bad that he's only a consultant. He could have been a real good protector of the island.
I also have a question about, like, I mean, I don't think it's literal, but, like, when Rinmore says, tell Zoe, don't talk to him, and then, you know, the man in black kills Zoe, like, we're all happy because we don't want her around anymore, but, like, he says, you told her not to speak to me, so she's useless, and, like, I know he means sort of, like, information-wise, but it still feels like it feeds back into that, like, as soon as he opens his mouth, you're, I don't know. Anyway, mm-hmm. What are the talking rules? I have a lot of questions about it. And then I guess I just want to, like, flag this thing for our first time watchers, which is this whole idea of Ana Lucia is there, but she's not ready yet. Ready for what? Who decides who is ready and what are they ready for? Like, well, how does Desmond know not to punch Ana Lucia in the face is my question. So, you know. And last but not least, this is something that I saw in a recap that I read that I thought was really interesting. This idea that, like, Saeed, Sun, and Jin die, and we've got our four folks left, and they are very sad, very traumatized, and it makes them, I think, more vulnerable to what Jacob is going to tell them here. They're just, like, in a really, they've had their shit rocked position.
Is it the equivalent of the episode title trying to convince us that it's Sun and Jin and Saeed died for something?
I mean, I will say I am so mad about Sun and Jin and Saeed this many years later, but at least this fireside scene where Kate yells about it somehow feels more true or more has more depth to it than the Lakeside, why did Natasha have to die endgame moment where they're just sort of like, she dies in that weekend, fight, let's go fight. And I'm just like, yeah. I don't love it. So, yeah, that's it. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
All right. That does it for the last non-finale episode of Lost Calm Discussion. Here come some penultimate corners. Neil, let's kick it off as we always do with the Giacchino corner.
Yeah, we're going back to our, we're just focusing on the titles of these songs because the score is great in this episode. He does a lot of great stuff. We talked about how the beginning sort of eases us in and we get a little bit of some of the new themes that he's working with. However, this episode, probably more than any other episode in season 6 so far, has some of the most ridiculously titled tracks of the season. So I would like you to choose your fighter. Just pick the one that you like the most out of these six. I will read them for you now. The first one is called Serial Experience. Shout out to the All Brand Theory.
Super brand.
The Four Amigos, which I believe is our four survivors from Flight 815 who are still on the island. Walk and Talk and Ah, which I think is for Richard. And that's great. Hide and Snitch, which shout out to Ben, always be snitching, apparently. Jack's Cup Runneth Over. Shout out to Jack, drinking that river water and becoming the island's protector. And then Get Out of Jail Free Card, which is for our sideways escapees who have by far the easiest prison escape of all time. They just, Ana Lucia just lets them out. It's fine.
While making a joke about shooting them.
And right.
Like, is that supposed to be a joke about how you got shot? I don't like it.
So which one of these do you think is the, I don't know, most funny, most endearing, whatever?
I mean, I'm going to Giacchino's Get a Jail Free Card because was it free or did it cost Hurley $140,000?
Sure. Which, in the context of how much money Hurley has, is basically free. It's okay, like the change he found in his couch, right?
I think I'm gonna go with Jack's Cup Runneth Over because, where did Jack get that cup?
Sure.
I mean, at least it's a camping cup, but where did he get that cup? Like, that's not his back. Like, he doesn't have his backpack anymore, right? Like, where did that backpack come from, right? Because, like, Locke has his backpack.
Yeah.
On the dock.
This is the backpack that had the bomb in it. Did he keep
that? No, but that blew up. So he found a new one on the shore, I guess. It has a cup in it.
Next to the pile of tarps on the island, there's a giant pile of backpacks.
Infinite backpacks. I'm going to take walk and talk and because, yes.
I mean, it's just great. I still think I would have taken serial experience because, I mean, what an experience it was.
Is that supposed to be like, it was a surreal experience?
Sure.
Surreal experience.
Keeping milk in a fucking glass jug.
Ugh, Jack, you war criminal.
We have an accent worth mentioning, even though it's not taking its quiz form. Joanna?
Oh, we just thought we'd shout out Desmond's shitty fake American accent.
Yeah, I know this one. Henry Ian Cusick is not American.
True. I think his American accent has gotten better, though. I've heard him do it on other shows. It's gotten better, but, this is not...
What's that show that he was on most recently? Was he in MacGyver? No.
Was he on MacGyver? The last thing I saw him on was The 100, but that's not necessarily the last thing he was on.
I'm curious whether he had an accent in that last show. I think it was MacGyver.
MacGyver?
Yeah.
MacGyver. Well, let's look up MacGyver and something I'd never thought I'd have to do. but we'll check it out. Our jungle of mystery moment is the man in black is going to destroy the island somehow. What?
Sure. Ben seems pretty chill about it, given that he was just promised he could have the island.
Yeah. Please.
Henry Ian Cusick plays a character called Rusty Taylor. Like, how many nicknames do you need, Russ? That's my question. Anyway.
The dumb, elaborate artifact of the week goes once again to Ben's little summoning toilet because the monster was summoning Ben the whole time.
You mean in his secret room?
Mm. His secret room.
That's a great line delivery from Miles, by the way.
Yeah, it's just more proof that we needed more Miles throughout the entire show.
Always.
Our Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award goes to Widmore, who collapses after being shot. There you go, Widmore. You won a falling down award.
I think the most important thing here is that it's not Zoe. Zoe does not win the falling down award.
Does not win this award.
Because Zoe sucks. I'd rather give it to Chuck.
The John Locke Memorial Coming Back Award goes to Danielle Rousseau. It's been, I believe Neil said, 38 episodes. Good to see you back. And very happy to see you happy. That's really what we wanted for you.
Yeah, she seems to be having a good life with her daughter, which is what we always really just wanted for her.
The Abs Eternal Award, that's also going to go to Sideways Danielle, who is rocking that dress.
Rocking a dress, heels, and like she's had a deep conditioning treatment on her hair. Looks great. She always looked great, let it be known. Like, I think Island Danielle looked great, but like, yeah. But way to go, City Danielle.
Ben's talking, so it's obviously a lie award. After leading Smokey into the secret room, Ben says, "Sorry, Charles."
what about Smokey saying he's not going to kill Penny? Like, I don't know.
A lot of people keep trying to kill Penny. This is wild.
The Jungle of Kistery. This one must have been weird because last week was Across the Sea. How'd we do, Joanna?
We did our best. And we've got a couple options here. We've got the Man in Black and the Light Cave, only 17.3% of the vote. Man in Black and the Other Humans, 20.3% of the vote. The Dagger and the Magnet, 21.8% of the vote. But running away with everything, we've got Jacob and Mom's Approval, 40.6% of the vote.
Yeah, I was rooting for the Dagger and the Magnet. Especially because we're down to the last couple of histories here. But
true.
I mean, Jacob.
More inanimate objects.
Yeah, Jacob's mother issues were really tough to beat this week.
I don't know who I would vote for this week. Whatever it is, it's the opposite of Ben and Danielle. That's what I would say.
Ooh. Feels like they could make the poll, though.
Yeah, they could. We've got to see how the live watchers take it. If you want to go vote on our almost final Jungle of History poll, you could go to Storm Podcast right now and you'll see how we did.
I know who's winning the finale, by the way.
There's heavy favorites, but never in a podcast called that was once called Storm of Spoilers. Leave room for spoilers in the finale poll.
I can think of at least one inanimate object that could win.
Ooh, yes, inanimate objects. Our Through the Looking Glass, this is where in the sideways people look into mirrors. Ben is staring into one after getting punchified, I believe Neil called it, at the school nurse's office.
Yeah.
And then we also have Jack with the cut neck, which we discussed. Oh,
right, yeah.
Cut neck.
Spot the difference corner. Anna Lucia is a bad cop, but we like that she's a bad cop this time.
Oh,
yeah. Still corrupt, but significantly more useful.
Yeah. I would rather money be changing hands than her be shooting anybody as a police officer. That seems, you know, a different type. The Charlie Pace Memorial Final Words Award. Once again, could have gone to Widmore because we like Widmore more, but it's just whispers. So the one we actually hear is, Zoe, my name is Zoe. And then someone slits her throat.
Yeah. It's about as far as anyone needs to get with Zoe before they take her out.
I should never have been on the show.
I'm a geologist. Maybe she could have said she was a geologist. The Frank Lapidus, we're not going to Guam Act Break Award, is still here, even though Frank is not. Jacob says, you should get your friends. We're very close to the end, Hugo. And we are very close to the end of Lost.
Jacob's out here spoiling the name of the next episode.
Jacob's like, I'm going to say not one, but two episode titles.
I'm the island god. You do what I say. So before we get to the final storm on the Storm the Lost Rewatch podcast, we will take a small break and be back right after this.
All right. Now is the time on the podcast where we like to thank our small counselors, our Patreon subscribers at the $10 level or above. We're getting like a bunch of new folks right here at the end. I can only guess they want to watch the finale with us. So welcome. Welcome. Let us start with some newcomers. Elizabeth Hobbs, Rain Sunderland, I want to say, Ed Pong, Beatty Hat, Scott Shields, lowercase c, Holly Hunt, Kelly Donahue, Bob Augustus, Stacy Axelrod, Mike McLaughlin, Madison Ray, hi Maddie, Robert Bowles, Chuck Parkey, Cameron Graham, Tom Shapansky, Mick Nick, Jocelyn Land, Jeremiah Perez, and Micah Wood. Thank you all so much.
And I would like to add to these thanks with Jane Phelps, Brian Latino, Ben Block, Maggie Paulin, Matt Hayes, Tiffany Welker, Laura Kaminsky, Wendy Marshall, Joseph Johnston, Brenda Moran, Russell Brody, Gary Labadia, Nell, Samantha Sherburn, Georgia Monroe Cook, Trey Menchaca, Dan Clayland, Christopher Woodside, Paul, and Michael Van Blaricom. Thank you very much.
And I would like to thank the following fine humans: Hope, Red Lucas, Nick Nylon, Aaron Badillo, Courtney Gack, Amanda Morell, MLC, Jessica Maranov, Jen Wendt, David Colley, Jen Betke, Katie Boyd, Michelle Tepper, Jason Allen, Shantae Gonzalez, Cloderic Mars, Jennifer Caldwell, Jennifer Trice, Kristen Butterfield, and Rosa. Thank you all for being members of this here small council. Candidates.
Except those of you that are mothers, apparently.
Yeah.
Being crossed off.
Sorry about
wall.
The ones that got crossed off. It's not our rule. Jacob, blame Jacob.
What can we do?
That guy sucks.
Dumb Jacob. Let's appeal to Jack. Or appeal to Hurley. Welcome to the storm.
Oh, right. That whole thing.
Yeah, you know, the one episode Jack gets to be an island god is next episode.
How long do I have to do this job? An hour or two.
Fun fact, you know how many days are left in Jack's life? One.
Zero. Or one.
Yeah, because this was day 13 on the island. He dies on day 14.
One more sleep till death, Jack. Yeah, Hurley has that line in this episode where he's like, glad it's not me.
Yeah. I've
never noticed that line before.
Yeah. So. You're very funny, Lost. You're very funny.
You get it.
It knows what it's doing. here we are, because next week everybody will know as much as we know, except maybe Man Behind the Curtain, but
I can't imagine that this storm section needs to be that long, right? Like, what are we here to say?
Yeah, no, I think it's more we get to gather here at the end of time, and we've all met, you storm listeners and us. We did this in a bifurcated way, and I really, if I would be like thinking back on it, and if I had pre-hashed better, I would go back and try to answer all the questions from my opening storm monologue. But I think I already had the non-answers in that goddamn monologue. I talked way too much about the Vanzetti equation, but it was season one, so what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. I forgot that they, I mean, like, you know, presumably people think Richard's dead.
Sure.
Is he still immortal? No, right? Like, since Jacob's dead, he's not immortal anymore? I don't know.
And, no, I think he's still immortal.
Yeah, right? He gets some gray hairs next week.
Yeah, so I didn't know if, like, does he become mortal when Smokey dies, or did he become mortal when Jacob died? I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, that's something I'll have to figure out.
Still think
I feel think a lot worse dead. For him being stuck in like that net for a couple of days if he could like be hurt.
Yeah. Frank is still alive, but we don't know that yet.
I forgot that didn't happen in this episode, so like got to the end, I'm like, oh, we should.
Well, and there's that's another sort of fun fact from the stuff that was cut from this episode, is that apparently there was a scene that may have included Hurley talking to Sawyer about, you know, how Sun and Jin and Saeed, well, not Saeed, because Sawyer was there for that, but how Sun and Jin died, and mentioning Frank. And a lot of folks have theorized that that's one of the reasons why they didn't include that scene, other than it being cut for time, was that they wanted to let the whole Frank thing linger. I mean, I don't remember being, you know, deeply invested in whether Frank was still alive. The first time around, I would be this time around, because Frank has been bringing the button watch so intensely that I would say that if you're watching along, if you've been watching Lost with us, you probably care more about Frank than people did 10 years ago.
Yeah, this episode really is of the time in the sense that it does not have time for Frank.
Sure.
Which, you know, he's the Robin Aaron of the final group, where it's just like, if you would have strode in season four, I'd be like, that guy, he makes it to the end. I would have been like, fuck you.
And he's hot at the end.
And he's hot at the end.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is, like, they need... Oh, that was a note I had. The way that they're bending over backwards to make sure that Ben and Desmond, two people who are not candidates, are involved in the end game, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like Ben doing this triple cross thing that he's doing with Smokey, right? And then, you know, Desmond being the secret key to everything somehow. It's a way to keep these like non-original but fan favorite characters in the mix here at the end, which you can see the seams of a little bit. But with Frank, you need to keep him because you need someone to fly the plane, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's
Apples Frank for when we need a pilot.
Yeah, because I mean, and you know, and I think it's sad that we didn't get more Frank in season six, I think. He mostly is just like Sun's glarer sidekick. Like, they just glare at each other a lot. And now that Sun is gone, we can let Frank be gone for an episode or two. But, you know, that'll be a fun return in this next episode. Like, it'll be fun to have Richard back. It'll be fun for Frank to come back. I think some of that stuff is fun, where it's like, oh, I didn't know that I needed this guy, but I'm glad he's still here to fly this plane off this island, you know?
Joanna, what do you think the spoiler is?
They were dead the whole time. I don't know. I don't know Shruti's friend. So like, maybe the spoiler is the sideways is heaven or something like that. I don't know. But like, I deeply suspect it's they were dead the whole time.
Yeah, the wrong spoiler.
Right?
I think there are a couple things it could be. Like, the final shot being the same as the opening shot, or basically a mirror of the opening shot. That's kind of a spoiler. Although I feel like at this point, no Call Me is going to be surprised if Jack doesn't make it through the series, right?
Also, I guess it depends. Is it a spoiler of somebody who's seen the show? But it sounded like a spoiler of somebody who heard the spoiler and then didn't want to see the show, right? Mm.
Let me look back at what
that's the question.
Well, I mean, if it is somebody who hasn't seen the show, and
yeah, my best friend has said she didn't bother watching Lost because she knows the spoiler.
So yeah, so you could be like, oh, yeah, everyone dies.
Yeah,
so then it's probably definitely everyone's been dead the whole time.
Yeah,
yeah. Like I don't know. I think the Hurley thing is a spoiler. That feels to me like the big that it's ultimately Hurley who ends up in charge of the island.
Yeah, but would that be bad enough that you would be like, oh, I'm not watching that?
No, it wouldn't turk. Actually, if you had told me before I watched more than like a couple episodes of Lost that in the end Hurley wins, I would be like, yeah, I can't wait to watch all of it.
I want to see how they get there.
But yeah, I think, and that was the big one at the time, was that, you know, this has all been sort of purgatory. And we'll talk next week about how ABC even sort of like stumbled their way into making that worse. Mm-hmm. But that is definitely not what's going on in Lost, as we all know, because we're here in the storm.
It is so interesting, like, once again, arcing out, right? Let's think about what we have to do in the finale, because this isn't a little bit of a place setter episode, right? So like, Jack has to have this big fight with the Man in Black and do all this shit, right? Yep. Kate gets to fucking kill the Man in Black, and they lay the track for that nicely in this episode, where she's like the one most angry at Sun and Jin and Saeed being dead, and is like, we have to kill him. And I'm like, yeah, and you get to do it, girl. All right. Hurley,
let's get you patched up and ready for your moment.
Hurley has a job. New Island God. What the fuck is Sawyer doing? He's smooching Juliet in the sideways. That's a great, it's a iconic moment. But what has he got left to do on the island? Help them get to the plane?
Yeah. Fly away. Go meet his daughter.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, start a commune with Kate, yes, and Claire and Cassidy, and they raise Jian.
We did get some suggestions from people about young actors who could be island babies, but once again, I think we'll save that for a mailbag episode.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, Lost 2 mailbag. Sorry, I'm getting more excited for Lost 2 as we get towards the end of Lost 1. It's just like, who doesn't want to go another time around? And, you know, blood on the next back, because that's where him and Locke have a little knife fight coming up.
I do remember, I haven't rewatched the finale since, what was it, last year when we did that big bonus episode for the anniversary. But I have, on every time I've watched it, really enjoyed that fight. Like, I think it's a well-choreographed, well-shot.
Oh, the Falcon fight Punch? Sequence.
Yeah.
The Falcon Punch is just because they have to do commercials. The fight is, like, not that bad.
Well, and the Falcon Punch might be the all-time act break winner. The most ridiculous thing Lost ever did going into a commercial. But otherwise, I do remember liking that fight. So we'll see if it still holds up next week.
I'm thrilled with us that here we are at the end of season 6. And we haven't accidentally had to bleep out that Rose and Bernard have been around doing fine this entire time.
Yeah.
Just like living their best lives.
Let Desmond out of the well. Well, yeah.
I mean, I think
that it's a real Lassie moment. You know what I mean? The hot Scots is down the well. What's that, Vincent?
Yeah, I mean, the spoiler is that Vincent's the hero of the whole thing. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, Vincent's the reason why everybody's going to cry at the end. Right, it's not that Jack is dying, it's when Vincent comes and lays down next to him, and I'm just like,
it's both simultaneously.
Yeah, it's wild.
And then you're like, that dog isn't in the church, that dog just thinks he's really dying.
Vincent gets his own church. And it's just
dog church.
Yeah, it's him and Walt and Shannon.
That's it. Rose and Bernard.
Rose and Bernard.
Let's get a little. Side
and
church.
One of the polar bears.
I was going to say the pets, the other island pets need to be there.
Hurley Bird.
The shark. The Hurley Bird. Mikhail.
Shark.
Mikhail's cat.
Mikhail's cat. Mikhail's cow.
His cow.
Oh, Mikhail's cow. And and the monkey that Dave thinks has built a hotel on the island.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oh, no, the monkey butler hotel.
And how could we forget Kate's horse?
An Electro Walt.
Okay. An Electro Walt.
Love it.
Oh, well, what a final storm this is. I mean, I don't know. What else do we want to say here?
I don't know. I think that's all it needs to be. Most of the work on the storm was done seasons ago, and thank you so much for joining us for it. It's going to be big going into the end. Until we go into the end, where could people find more of your work around the internet? Let's start this week with Neil Miller.
Well, you know, you can always get me over at filmschoolrejects.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Rejects or at One Perfect Shot. That's a popular account that people like that I do. And, you know, I think it goes without saying at this point, but definitely be in the Slack for this last live watch. It's going to be fun. We're not going to have any sync issues because Hulu has given us one final gift, which is the uncut finale of Lost, and I can't wait to watch it with everyone.
And Joanna Robinson,
where can folks find me?
Yeah,
online at vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This, covering a myriad motley crew of TV shows over on Still Watching. That's where you can find me.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can also hear me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, being mad that people won't keep their movies streaming day and date releases because there's a pandemic going on. But more importantly, I'll be here for at least 2 more weeks telling you to don't fall down, always wear your bug spray, and don't get involved in white men's posthumous bullshit. The ashes are burning down. Soon this won't be our problem anymore. See you next week.